MSW Media. Thanks to Athletic Greens for supporting the Daily Beans. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D plus five free travel packs with your first purchase. Just go to athleticgreens.com/dailybeans to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. News with Daily Beans. Hello and welcome to the Daily Beans for Tuesday, October 18th, 2022. Today, the Department of Justice has filed its sentencing recommendation for Stephen K. Bannon in his criminal contempt case, asking for 6 months in prison and a $200,000 fine. Some very racy texts come to light in the Oath Keepers trial, and I'm sad to say I've given that story to Dana. A House inquiry has found that Trump hotels charge the Secret Service and therefore the taxpayers exorbitant amounts of money, and the jury is deliberating in the last-ditch case by Durham to prove literally anything about the investigation into Crossfire Hurricane. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Dana Goldberg.
Hey, Dana. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday, AG. Thank you for a moment on Sunday. It's nice to be back in everyone's ears today.
Yes, it is good to have you back. I told everyone that you love them and want to marry them. So
I do. I want to marry everybody. Why not? Yeah. Now's the time.
And, you know, hey, why not? And, you know, just don't propose it at like a Dodgers game, you know?
Yeah, don't do a jumbo screen for me, please.
Which you can't anymore because the Dodgers lost. Womp, womp. Okay.
Oh, dear. That was shade. That was a lot of shade. We're going to be fighting people, just so you know.
Hey, it's a fun week to be a Guardians and a Padres fan. So.
Padres, totally fair. And honestly, I could give a shit about baseball. So there's that.
There's also that. It's the sports ball. And today we're going to talk nothing but sports on the daily. No, I'm just kidding.
We've already lost half of our listeners.
We already have. Now that they're gone. No. We're going to actually talk with Chris Scott today. He's the chief political officer at Democracy for America. That's one of the oldest and largest progressive PACs in the country with more than a million members nationwide. I'm looking forward to that discussion. And Dana, as you heard me say in the intro, the jury is out on the Danchenko trial. I give deliberations until maybe the end of tomorrow.
Okay.
Which is Wednesday. And I give Durham a 20% chance, maybe, of securing a conviction. You know, I gave Sussman zero, like a 0% chance. And We locked that in. He was acquitted. But this, you know, this one's a little bit different. There was five counts. Well, now four because the judge dismissed one. And at the end of closing arguments, Dana, oh, my God, Durham was like, this Crossfire Hurricane, you know, Russia hoax, burr, burr, burr. And the judge is like, wrap it up. You should finish. I've never seen a judge do that before. So that's not going to look good in front of a jury.
And like, we got to go to lunch. Let's go.
Yeah. So, yeah, and stop using my courtroom for your bullshit conspiracy theories. All right, we have a lot of news to get to. Let's hit the hot notes. Hot notes. Quote: From the moment that the defendant Stephen K. Bannon accepted service of a subpoena from the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol, he has pursued a bad faith strategy of defiance and contempt. The committee sought documents and testimony from the defendant relevant to a matter of national importance, the circumstances that led to a violent attack on the Capitol and disruption of the peaceful transfer of power. In response, the defendant flouted the committee's authority, ignored the subpoena's demands. The defendant, a private citizen and a walking cold sore, claimed, that's not in the thing, claimed that executive privilege, which did not apply to him and would not have exempted his total noncompliance even if it had, justified his actions. Then, on the eve of trial, he attempted an about-face, representing to the committee that former President Trump had waived executive privilege and freed the defendant to cooperate. But this proved a hollow gesture. When he realized that his 11th-hour stunt would not prevent his trial, the defendant's cooperative spirit vanished. Despite the removal of the only purported barrier to his compliance, to this day, the defendant has not produced a single document to the committee or appeared for testimony. For his sustained bad faith contempt of Congress, the defendant should be sentenced to 6 months imprisonment, the top end of the sentencing guidelines range, and fined $200,000 based on his insistence on paying the maximum fine rather than cooperate with the probation office's routine pre-sentencing financial investigation. At the defendant's trial, the reason he willfully defaulted, that is, why he deliberately chose not to comply, was not relevant. Now, at sentencing, it is. This court can and should consider the defendant's motive as part of his history and characteristics and as part of the nature and circumstances of the offense. So the defense he wasn't allowed to use now comes into play when considering how long he should go to prison. I love that. For any defendant convicted of a federal offense and facing sentencing, that investigation typically includes a personal interview. After you get convicted, you sit down, you talk to the probation office, we go through your financials, and we decide what an appropriate fine is, right? For the defendant's part, he cooperated in that investigation only insofar as it was convenient to his interests. He freely answered questions about his family, professional life, background, and health, but the defendant refused to disclose his financial records, instead insisting he's willing and able to pay any fine imposed, including the maximum fine on each count of conviction. Deal. The mandatory minimum sentence of 1 month in prison is insufficient to account for, punish, and deter his criminal offenses. The court should instead impose the sentence of 6 months imprisonment, that is the maximum top end of the sentencing guidelines, and fine the defendant $200,000 based on his demand to pay the maximum fine in lieu of participating in the standard questioning. The first step in determining the appropriate sentence is to look at the statute of conviction itself. In plain terms of Section 192, it requires the defendant be sentenced to a term of imprisonment in a common jail for not less than 1 month, nor more than 12 months for each count of conviction. The terms may be imposed concurrently. That's why they didn't say 12 months, 6 months for each conviction, because those terms may be imposed concurrently at the same time. The next step in determining the appropriate sentence is to calculate the applicable advisory sentencing range under United States sentencing guidelines. And the final step is to consider the various factors set forth in 18 U.S. Code Section 3553A, including the nature, circumstances, and seriousness of the offense, the history and characteristics of the defendant, the need to promote the rule of law, provide just punishment, the need to afford adequate deterrence, and the need to avoid unwarranted sentencing disparities from, you know, other people convicted of the same crime. Those factors, which are addressed, all support a guidelines-compliant sentence at the top of the advisory sentencing range. And then they close out by saying, the rioters who overran the Capitol on January 6th did not just attack a building, they assaulted the rule of law upon which this country was built and through which it endures. By flouting the Select Committee's subpoena and its authority, the defendant exacerbated that assault. To this day, he continues to unlawfully withhold documents and testimony that stand to help the committee's authorized investigation to get to the bottom of what led to January 6th and ascertain what steps must be taken to ensure it never happens again. That cannot be tolerated. Respect for the rule of law is essential to the functioning of the United States government and to preserving the freedom and good order this country has enjoyed for more than two centuries. The defendant's bad faith strategy of defiance and contempt deserves severe punishment. This court should impose a sentence of 6 months imprisonment reflecting the most severe guidelines compliant punishment available, and fine the defendant $200,000. So I know a lot of folks are disappointed, but this is actually the maximum
which is
available
nuts. Yeah.
that they can give him for a misdemeanor, two misdemeanor charges of contempt of Congress. And I'll go over the legal wonkiness with real life lawyer Andrew Torres on tomorrow's cleanup on Aisle 45 pod.
Sounds great. And from Kyle Chaney at Politico covering the Oath Keepers trial. Now, prosecutors on Monday entered the sex, guns, and road trip portion of their sprawling, seditious conspiracy case against five leaders of the far-right Oath Keepers, presenting a new pile of vivid, granular, and at times R-rated evidence to the jury. Now, among the new details, surveillance footage taken from the Comfort Inn, showing Watkins, Caldwell, and another Oath Keeper, Donovan Crowell, saluting each other hours after returning from the mob riot at the Capitol. The footage shows members of the Oath Keeper hauling large carts of cases that prosecutors say contain weapons into their hotel rooms. Now, prosecutors also showed the jury a new series of text messages sent among leaders of the group as they traveled to Washington in the days before January 6th. And now it showed them carefully coordinating their locations and plans as they converged on Washington, with some stopped at prearranged outposts outside Washington on their way in. Amid that travel, prosecutors revealed messages between Rhodes and Kelly Sorrell.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, what'd I do?
No, you're just about to read some horrible things.
Oh, God. I was like, I fucked up a word. I'm ready. Okay, here we go. Oh, no, God. You guys, I'm really sorry.
I'm just apologizing to you.
An attorney. Damn you. I'm going to pay you back. An attorney who Rhodes has claimed served as the group's general counsel, but who prosecutors say did not act in that capacity, engaging in sexually explicit banter. I'm going to throw up in my mouth. Is this going to make me gayer? It is. Fuck. Okay, here we go. Quote, speaking of fucking, if you need some, come over. That's what Rhodes wrote to Sorrell on January 2nd, 2021. Sorrell replied that she couldn't, but after a lengthier exchange said, you're too good at what you do. Whole bad boy thing. I'm a damn moth to a flame emoji. I really am replaying my teenage years. Well, she was
fucking skinheads as a teenager?
I guess so. And you know what? I take that back. Women can sleep with as many people as they want and not be a whore. However, this seems a little bit salacious. Now, the messages underscore the personal relationship between Rhodes and Sorrell, even as some of the defendants have sought to keep some of her messages excluded by claiming attorney-client privilege. You can't do that. You weren't the fucking lawyer at this time. He was fucking the lawyer at this time. Prosecutors also sought to continue undercutting a key defense of the Oath Keepers that they were in Washington only to serve as security details for VIPs attending pro-Trump rallies. And that's as part of any plan to disrupt the peaceful transfer of power. So they're saying they were there for that, not as any part of that plan. DOJ attorneys played several audio segments of a podcast joined by two Arizona Oath Keepers, Vallejo and Todd Conderas. And on the morning of January 6th, the pair described their presence in Washington as part of an effort to forcibly prevent Biden from taking office. And this is a quote. We are the final check and balance to this process. That's from Conderas. He went on to say, is there a shot heard around the world moment? The possibility definitely exists. I know. These fuckers. I mean, literally and figuratively. Send them all to jail.
attorney-client fuck privilege, yeah. I guess. Doesn't exist. You know. Yeah. Gross. All right. Now, again, I'm not sexed shaming here.
No, not at all. It's just pretty gross.
I'm just sexed shaming this particular them. Person.
I love sexting. Okay, so there. We're not shaming this at all. Just I said it. Not, I own it.
Just not Stuart Rhodes. And he clearly wouldn't take no for an answer. She was like, no. But then later she was like, oh, you're just too good at what you do. I'm like a moth to the flame.
I had some sexting gone terribly wrong once with someone I dated. Do you want to hear this or should we save it?
I do. I want to hear it.
She actually texted me. This is for all the listeners too. It's in my act. And she texted me and she said, I've been fantasizing about fucking you all weekend. And so I text back and I was like, just tell me where. And she texts back and she goes, oh, in the vagina, always the vagina. And I was like, I said, oh, this relationship's not going to work. In the vagina, always. Yeah, there's no other option. Let's keep it moving on the story. What do you got for me next, AG?
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, speaking of that, no, I don't have a segue. I really don't have a segue.
Speaking of getting fucked.
Yeah, there we go. Speaking of getting fucked, us, the taxpayers, took it right in the vagina. The Trump Organization charged the Secret Service up to $1,185 per night for hotel rooms used by agents protecting the former guy and his family. That's according to documents released on Monday by the House Oversight Committee, forcing a federal agency to pay well above government rates. The committee released Secret Service records showing more than $1.4 million in payments by the department to Trump properties since Trump took office in 2017. The committee said that the accounting was incomplete, however, because it did not include payments to Mr. Trump's foreign properties, where agents accompanied his family repeatedly, and because the record stopped in September 2021. The records the panel managed to obtain provided new details that we haven't seen before about an arrangement in which Trump and his family effectively turned the Secret Service into a captive customer for their business by visiting their properties hundreds of times and then charging the government rates far above its usual spending limits for their protectors to follow. The record also makes clear that Mr. Trump's son, Eric, who ran the family business while his father was in office, provided a misleading account of what his company was charging. In 2019, Eric said the Trump Organization was charging the government only like $50 a night.
Yeah, right.
Instead, records obtained by the committee showed Trump International Hotel in D.C. repeatedly charged the Secret Service rates more than $600 per night. In one case, $1,160 a night for a room used while protecting Eric Trump in 2017. Eric.
That's a waste of money.
That was more than four times higher than the government's usual spending limit for Washington hotels, but Secret Service officials approved, according to the records. The same year, the record showed Trump's hotel in D.C. charged their services $1,185 for a room used while guarding Trump Jr. Previously, the highest rate that the Trump organization was known to have paid for a hotel room was $650 a night for rooms at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach. That was the previous reporting. If you're saying, this sounds familiar, this isn't new.
Oh, yeah.
No, we know, but the most we had heard before was $650. Today, we got the numbers, $1,160, $1,185. On Monday, Eric Trump issued a statement saying the Trump organization, quote, would have been substantially better off if hospitality services were sold to full paying guests. He did not address the discrepancy between the rates he claimed the company had charged and the rates shown in the record. That's basically what he's saying is if we sold that to regular people, it would have been more than $1,185 a night. And let me tell you, I've stayed at a lot of hotels in downtown D.C. and that's still a fucking ripoff.
Oh, yeah.
In the past, the company's representatives have said it billed the government at cost and could have made more money renting rooms to other guests. The company continued to charge the Secret Service since Trump left office and began living at his properties full time. In 2020, the Post reported that the government had spent more than $2.5 million at Trump properties during his presidency. The payments came from multiple agencies and were largely prompted by Donald's travel. So,
There you go. And speaking of Trump, the Trump administration aides usurped control of CDC communications and blocked public health officials from providing accurate information about the coronavirus to American people. That's from the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Crisis. That was led by Democratic Rep. Jim Clyburn. That's what he said in a report released Monday. And I would say to that, no shit, we all knew. Now, continuing on in this third wide-ranging investigation on the government response to the coronavirus pandemic, Democratic officials spoke with several senior officials who were at the U.S. Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, including former director Dr. Robert Redfield, who said that Trump officials blocked the department from conveying information to Americans early on in the pandemic. The subcommittee also spoke to senior officials at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services during the Trump administration. 91-page report from the subcommittee utilized interviews with officials to make the case that former President Donald Trump and his team, quote, installed political operatives who sought to downplay the seriousness of the pandemic. Let me just remind you, everyone, right now that a million fucking people died in the United States from this. Now, in one instance, a senior CDC communications officer, Kate Galatis, sounds actually right, told the subcommittee, Michael Caputo, a close Trump ally, who we know, who was appointed as Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs at the Department of Health and Human Services, used bully-ish behavior that made officials at the CDC feel threatened. The report also contains allegations from Dr. Jay Butler, CDC's Deputy Director of Infectious Disease, who claims he was, quote, not really asked back to do telebriefings after Caputo was displeased with Butler's statements, which he allegedly found too alarming. Yeah, they might have been factual, is what he's trying to say. The committee also wrote in its investigation that Trump administration officials in HHS attempted to influence the CDC's scientific reports on the COVID-19 pandemic in the time period of May to September of 2020, when it was fucking raging, editing the content or blocking the publication of at least 19 different reports they believe could have been harmful to Donald.
Oh, my God.
This is horrifying. And Mary's been talking about this for years.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. The report has also stated HHS political appointees were successful in, quote, altering or delaying the release of at least five scientific reports, as well as pressuring CDC to change the editorial process of the MMWR. Now, the subcommittee report concluded the Trump administration's interference in CDC's efforts to respond to the pandemic and attacks against CDC scientists reflected a large pattern of hostility that ultimately impacted a broad swath of public health officials and agencies. And in return, I'm adding, probably killed fucking a million people.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's infuriating.
Yeah, I mean, you remember when that lady made a statement when he was on the plane and he tried to fire her and then got rid of the inspector general and then said, you know, you shut up, you're scaring everybody. And she's like, they should be scared, you know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then a bunch of people in Congress sold stocks. Cool.
Yeah, fuckers. Or they bought stock in like
coffins.
You know? Yeah, no, that's right. In I don't know what their homes, funeral homes.
Yeah.
Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting.
Yeah. And this is really just the tip of the iceberg, to be honest. Same with the stuff about the Secret Service and the spending of the money. All of this is just, there's so much we don't know. And it's just going to come out over years and years and years. It's terrifying and sickening. All right, stick around for a more positive discussion, enlightening discussion with the Chief Political Officer at Democracy for America, Chris Scott. Stay with us.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, I want to talk about something I use every day. Dana uses it every day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted to optimize my immune system. After getting vaxxed, double vaxxed, double boosted, I wanted that little extra kick in my immune system. And I wanted a supplement that actually tasted good. With just one delicious scoop of AG1, you get 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, adaptogens, everything you need to help start your day right. Athletic Greens contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, and it still tastes fantastic. And that's why I take it with me, even when I go traveling. I'm going to DC this weekend. I'll be taking it with me. I've got these travel packs. And speaking of that, we want to thank Athletic Greens for their support. And they're offering you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D plus 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Just go to athleticgreens.com/dailybeans. In 2020, Athletic Greens purchased carbon credits that support projects protecting old growth rainforests so you can be healthy and help the planet too. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health, arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. It was getting to the point where it took me literally like 15 minutes to take my vitamins. Now it's just one delicious scoop and a cup of water. And to make it easy, like I said, Athletic Greens is going to give you that free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D plus 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/dailybeans. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/dailybeans to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I am really honored today to be joined by the Chief Political Officer at Democracy for America. Please welcome Chris Scott. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Allison. Thanks so much for having me on today.
It's really, really great to be able to talk to you. I've been very excited about this interview because the Democracy for America, DFA, it's one of the oldest and largest progressive PACs in the country. Can you tell us a little bit about this PAC and its membership and sort of the aim, the vision and the mission of your PAC?
Yeah. So Democracy for America first came out of Howard Dean's presidential campaign. And I think we're probably the longest standing organization to come out of a presidential campaign before. So we've been here for 18 years. Next year, we'll make it 19. And really, we have been probably one of the oldest kind of godfathers of the progressive movement, at least in modern times, when we're talking about PAC work. And so we've elected over 1,100 candidates in our 18 years of existence. We have over 1 million members strong nationally, have raised tons and tons of money in support of candidates. But kind of where we are right now is, you know, this isn't what we like to say your grandfather's DFA. You know, the modernized version of DFA reflects a lot of the things that I think you see progressive groups really pushing for. And so when you look at our candidates, it's probably the most diverse it's ever been in its history. And that's something that we have, we're really proud of. When we look at the 131 endorsements we did this year, 95 of those endorsements were people of color and from the New American Majority. And so we really are big on not only making sure we talk the talk, but we walk the walk, and that we're on the front lines of battling to protect our democracy and push this country forward.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of folks don't realize is Howard Dean was extremely progressive for his time. Now we look at him and think, oh, super moderate, almost a Republican. But it's really PACs like the Democracy for America PAC that have moved the entire political framework and lexicon to the left over time. It's sort of like what the Tea Party wishes it could have done, you know, for the Republicans. Instead, they moved them all the way into fascism at some point. And that's why I think that, you know, like you said, you've been around for so long. But I want to drive home the point that as you, you know, organizations like yours move the political landscape to the left, you know, it gets more progressive and more progressive. And so talk about some of the candidates to give folks an idea how far we've come from Dean to where we are now with regard to your pack, because I know you know what I mean.
I got exactly what you're saying.
some of the candidates you're working with now.
Yeah, so I think it's, you probably really saw this seismic shift, particularly with DFA in 2018, when you have that wave across America that you saw a different representation. I believe we were one of the only organizations to endorse every original member of the squad back in 2018. And then you get to 2020, the Jamal Bowmans, the Cori Bushes, we were there. And so when you look at this year, I got to say, I think it's one of the most impressive candidate hauls that we've had in recent mind. We have somebody like Mandela Barnes, who is a DFAer from day one. We supported him when he was first running for state ledge, and now he's running for the U.S. Senate in probably one of the most watched races this year. You look at somebody like Summer Lee. We had Jessica Cisneros down in Texas, Delia Ramirez, and Illinois, Greg Kassar, Maxwell Frost. And then you still have your Katie Porters, your Andy Kims. And what really separates us as an organization is not just the endorsements that we make, but how we work with the candidates. We really believe that progressives do best when we don't get caught up in the game that everybody else gets caught up in. And so what that means for us is, we really want to work with a campaign, make sure that they have a strong field game, that they're doing what they need to reach voters directly. That's all on the phones, over text, on the doors, because that's the bread and butter of the progressive movement. We're never necessarily going to outraise our opponents, but when we motivate the grassroots the way that our candidates do, it just puts us on a whole nother level. So that's just a few of the federal. Of course, we got Stacey Abrams, we got Beto O'Rourke, we got Deidre DeGeer out in Iowa. And so, again, really impressed and happy with the group of candidates that we have this year.
Yeah. And I think what's important is that your PAC recognizes that not, you know, you've been to one district, you've been to one district. Not every district is the same. And in a district where Jayapal or Kenyatta will do well, or AOC will do well, is not the same district where a more moderate Democrat will do well. And so talk a little bit about how you discuss within the PAC balancing that understanding where, you know, the whole idea here right now in our history is to elect Democrats, whether they're moderate or whether they're progressive, because we're facing down autocratic creep right now. How do you balance that out? Because I think that you have got the right formula of understanding which districts and how progressive, et cetera, a candidate will work in those districts. Because it's not just about going full force with a platform. It's also about understanding the constituency in that particular district, right?
Yeah. So I think that's one of the things when we talk about even progressive candidates, I think there's just this label of every single progressive candidate is exactly the same. And that's not true. The progressive that you have running in the South is running a different race than necessarily the progressive that's running in upstate New York. And so I think I will argue we have one of the most, if not the most extensive endorsement process. You have to go through 5 stages just to get our endorsement in the first place. And so it's not just about, you know, what somebody's raising, but we are intently looking at what's the history of that district. Is winnable. And even if it's not a winnable, is this the type of candidate that is the type to catalyze a movement on the ground, even if they came up short in an election? So we are really thorough in how we look at races. But again, we're not blind to the fact of you cannot run the same race in every single district in America. And I think that's where a lot of our candidates like us is that we allow them to still be them, but we really work with them on, at the end of the day, what makes progressive so successful is because a lot of these candidates speak to those kitchen table issues that everybody is worried about. The common voter, the thing that's keeping them up at night, them worried about, you know, can I even afford to go to the emergency room, let alone feed my full family? Am I making enough at work and not just having a minimum wage, but an actual livable wage? And so I think when you couple that with the messages they have and you work with them to gear it to maximize how that can actually reach voters, I think that's also why we've been so successful. We can have a lot of candidates, but we're also very picky with who we endorse.
Yeah, exactly. But it's so necessary, particularly when you go from district to district and how different the voters are in these districts. Mm-hmm. Now, talk a little bit about the money that you raise with this PAC and how you utilize those donations to get out the vote, because there's a lot of different ways. Some, PACs say we're going to get the vote out, but yours is a real bottom up, middle out, grassroots way. And I think it's the most effective way to do it. Talk a little bit about some of the practical applications people's money goes toward when they donate to this PAC.
No, so I love that you brought up that question, because again, I think when people hear the word PAC, they just think, oh, you just throw a check at a candidate. And that is far, we are less likely to give you a check and more likely directly to put in your field program or something like that. The best example I can give is we have a really robust text out the vote program. And so when we're texting, one, who we're looking at, oftentimes nobody else is looking at those voters. We're going to the voters who everybody said, well, we would love to talk to them, but we just don't have the time to actually reach out to them. And so we're engaging those people that feel like that they don't have a voice or they're forgotten. So the best example, when I first got to DFA in 2021, we picked up a judicial race in Pennsylvania. Judge Lori Dumas was running for the Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court. And so for her general election, we targeted, close to 100,000 voters that typically are not regularly even local year voters and typically won't vote in a midterm, because we knew she needed to turn those out. Out of those 100,000, close to 100,000 voters that we text, we were able to get 25,000 of them to actually go vote. She won by a little bit over 20,000 votes, her court seat. And so that's one of the things of, when you get to get on the phone with a candidate the next day and they are just ecstatic because they know that made a huge difference. That's what you're talking about in making an impact and how DFA does our investment. When you give dollars to DFA, every single last cent is going to be spent on making sure that we're doing our best to turn out a voter to make a difference in an election.
And that is a huge percentage. Normally, you can count on 2 or 3% of your targeted voters getting out, and you got 25%. That is astounding. Mm-hmm. I need you to do promotion for me for my shows so that we can get more people listening.
I got you.
Well, I really appreciate talking to you today, because I think, we're 21 days from about 20 days to the midterms. When the show airs, and the work that you're doing is so important. And I wanted to spotlight it. So can you tell listeners where they can find information about your PAC, how they can give you some dollars to get out the vote? Because like I said, it's such a good bang for your buck. It's such a good value for your dollar when you give to this organization. So let everyone know.
So if they want to go to www.democracyfor, and that's spelled out FOR America.com, you can find our donation page and to give either just directly to the PAC, or maybe if you're interested in our Purple to Blue program that works on flipping legislatures, our Flip the South program that invests dollars into the South. Either way, you can give and support this work and know that your money is not going to be wasted and that every dollar is going to make a difference in hopefully making sure that we put a stop to this Republican extremism that we're seeing, especially with the number of election deniers running this year, especially against progressive candidates.
100%. Everybody, that's democracyforamerica.com. Chief Political Officer Chris Scott, I appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for talking to me.
Thanks so much, Allison.
Everybody stick around. We'll be right back with the good news. Hey, y'all, it's AG. I started getting the best night's sleep of my life the first night I started using my custom mattress from Helix Sleep. Helix Sleep has a lineup of 14 unique mattresses, including a collection of luxury models, ones for big and tall sleepers, and even mattresses made just for kids, because that's what they do. They customize your mattress to your body type and sleep preferences. How do they know? Well, you take their quick online 2-minute sleep quiz at helixsleep.com/dailybeans, and they will match the mattress that's perfect for you. They ship it right to your door free of charge. You get 100 sleeps to try it risk-free. And if you decide it's not the best fit, they'll come and pick it up for you. Full refund. No problem. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design. They combine individually wrapped steel coils on the base for super great support and those premium foam layers on top for the softness. It's perfect. Comfort, support, everything. I love it. Plus, Helix mattresses are made in the United States. They come with a 10 or 15 year warranty, depending on the model. I took the quiz at helixsleep.com/dailybeans. I was matched with the Helix Midnight because I'm a side sleeper and I like a medium firm bed. So it is perfect for me and it is the best night's sleep I've ever had. Head and shoulders, like no contest. And right now, Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders plus two free pillows for listeners. Just go to helixsleep.com/dailybeans. With Helix, better sleep starts now. Everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news.
Who likes good news? Everyone? Then good news, everyone.
Good news, good news. And if you have any good news, confessions, corrections, anything you want to send us, Halloween photos, especially animals dressed up for Halloween or Christmas sitting on Santa's lap, whatever, anything you want to send us, any holiday photos, Whoopi stories, I miss those.
Oh, love the Whoopi. I miss those too.
I miss those. Send in your Whoopi stories. That
if
means
you want
like,
to send you know, Dana pictures of babies, please yep. do.
Yep. And frog orgies for me. where did that even come from?
Because yeah, there was a frog orgy story.
Yeah, I it's an inside joke now, and now it's been so long, I don't even remember why. but anyway, whatever you have, you can send it to us at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. I'm going to kick us off with Marty, pronouns he and him. Allison, first off, I've been listening since the kitchen table days, and your pod is the first thing I listen to every day. As a lawyer, lawyers listen to me. It's been fun listening to you and witnessing you become far more knowledgeable in criminal law and procedure than I ever was. Second, thanks to you and the PodSave guys and your selling abilities, I have been an AG Athletic Greens consumer for several months. And while making it in the mornings, I've started singing, "It's juice with asparagus, daily greens, daily greens." which I thought I'd share. I'm also the one that started the misheard lyrics segment when I commented that I thought it was "It's news, it's scary, daily beans, daily beans."
Oh,
keep up
funny.
The good work, friends. I've attached a picture of our dog Millie because she is the best.
Look
Marty, thank you. Millie is adorable.
Millie is adorable. Thank you for kicking us off with that. I also use the greens and I love them. Yep, I take them every morning.
Yeah,
and I feel like I have more energy when I'm spinning and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and there's already an ad for it in this particular show. But I mean, I have to say, I don't have to have like 20 different bottles of supplements. So
isn't that nice?
Pleases me.
And it doesn't taste bad. All right, let's keep it moving. This is from Angela, pronouns she and her. Hi, my wonderful beans queens. I wanted to share from the hellscape that is Texas, there's a grassroots group making a difference. You might hear MAGA around and think Trump, but no, it's Mothers Against Greg Abbott.
Yes.
I'm not a mom myself, but was clued into the group by a friend. These women are getting the work done. They're amazing. And if Beto wins, he has them to thank. For pet tax, you get my little grumpy Griff mop. He's a judgmental little ass, but I love him. Look at that fucking snaggle tooth.
So adorable.
Oh,
it reminds
God.
Me of my BFF, Joelle. She does all of our, you know, web design and stuff. She's got a little Malty poo named Marley, and he's like a, like he makes these little gorilla sounds when he's when he doesn't get his walkies or whatever. And this just kind of has the same vibe. I love it.
So cute.
All right. Next up from Alice, pronouns she and her. I confess, I too have modified songs of different genres to suit my dogs. Our Siberian Husky Wolfie was clearly a classical music fan, so Mozart's Eine kleine Nachtmusik was sung as Wolfie, 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 Wolf, Wooly, 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 Wolf. Okay, that's the best I can do with that.
Well done, though. That was good, good. I'm glad I didn't get this fucking story. Go ahead.
Wolfie, Wolf, 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 Wolfie. Okay. And Yankee Doodle Dandy was She's a Murphy Doodle Dandy, a Murphy Doodle Do or Die. For our Lab Shepherd mix, Murphy is the Irish potato dog, a.k.a. Murphy the Lionhearted, and our third girl, Bashful, a.k.a. Camel Dog, a.k.a. Barbalute, had a Susian jingle about the brown Barbalute in her Barbalute suit. It was a shared song, too.
Oh, my God.
down by the beast bowels early in the morning, see the little puppy bellies all in a row.
Oh,
to down by the station. That song is a song I'm not too familiar with, but it seems like down by the beast bowls early in the morning. See, yeah, I can feel it. They were color coded too. Wolfie had a red collar and leash to go with her auburn fur. Murphy was blue, and Bashful chose purple by chewing a purple marker, leaving a purple stripe down her side.
Oh my God.
For pet dogs, I give you Wolf, Murphy, and Bashful, all gone now, but always loved.
Look at these huskies.
Oh, and look at I think these are like labbies.
Oh my God, they're so sweet though.
Oh, she says lab shepherd and the Irish potato dog.
Oh my goodness. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Beautiful.
They are. All right. This is old Katie in Kentucky. So many times similar instances have happened. Does this happen to y'all? On today's episode of Siri is a Nosy Bitch. I was doing yard work while listening to music through my ear pods, singing along out loud. Sorry, neighbors. The song Lean On Me came on and I was owning that shit, singing out loud. Just call on me, brother. Now Siri chimes in. You do not have a listening for brother in your contacts list. I don't have brothers, by the way. Attached pic shows proof that I got my yard work done.
Your house and yard
looks fantastic. It's very pristine.
That is a nice old Kentucky home.
Just call on me, brother. Okay. You do not have a listing for brother in your contacts list.
It's like the old LA story. Dial mom. This is Julian from Domino's Pizza. Would you like to hear our specials today?
Yeah.
All right. Next up from Kirsten in PA01, pronouns she and her. Hey, Leguminati, I was just listening to one for the history books and I squeed out loud when I heard a letter writer, Heather Ann's doggy song, because we sing that too for our doggo, Honey. Our doggy has a first name, H-U-N-N-Y. Our doggy has a second name, B-U-N-N-Y. I love to insert verb. Pet hug, kiss her every day. And if you ask me why, I'll say, because Honey Bunny has a way with her M-O-M-M-A.
Well done. Well
so
done.
Cute. And there's an alternate ending. Because Honey Bunny isn't shy. She loves her D-A-D-D-Y. Okay, that's adorable.
Oh, you guys are cute.
I've included a pic of her in an autumn sweater. And teaser, somebody has a honeybee costume just waiting for Halloween. Okay, that is a tease, Kirsten. We need to see it ASAP. We'll send pics once we get her dressed up. Keep up all the great work you do. And if any of you are in blue states with safe upcoming elections and want to help out a swing district in PA, and yeah, PA01 needs the help, just DM me and I can set you up with phone banking or text banking activities through Indivisible's Give No Ground program. Very
well
cool.
Well done. I love it. I love it.
Oh, look
at that sweetness.
That looks like such a soft puppy.
He does look like a soft puppy. I want to touch him.
With the velvety ears and the sweater.
The sweater.
So great. Hey, this was a very musical episode.
It was. It was enjoyable.
We had kind of Nacht Musik. We had the Oscar Mayer Wiener song about dogs. This was great.
I'm so glad you got most of those. I was like, there's no way I would have known how that went.
Amazing. Thank you, everyone, for sending these in. If you have songs you sing to your animals, I want to hear it. And anything else that you want to send us, you can do it at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. Dana, do you have any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I do not have final thoughts other than everyone have a wonderful, wonderful day.
You too. And I will. And everyone out there should. And also, please take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Take care of the planet. Take care of your mental health. Vote blue over Q.
And take someone with you.
I've been AG.
And I've been DG.
And that was The Beans. The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg and Amy Carrero. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane, with art and web design by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit MSWmedia.com.
MSW Media.